Hi, it's Dave. Welcome. Today, I'm joined by Gary Black. He is a longtime investor with a lot of experience in the asset management world. He's been prolific on Twitter under at Gary Black 00, or is it 00? I'm not sure, but 00. Okay, great. And I've been looking forward to having Gary on my show because I think he kind of gives the connection, the bridge for retail investors to understand what Wall Street and institutional investors are thinking. And Gary is free and generous to share his thoughts on Twitter. He's been a fantastic contributor to the Tesla community, and I've been learning a lot. So I want to welcome you, Gary, on the show.
Thanks, Dave. Good to see you.
Yeah, awesome. Fantastic. So we just heard Q1 blowout numbers, almost 185,000 vehicles. What's going through your head right now?
Well, look, you got to look at relative to expectations. The street was looking for 172. So it's about a 7% beat. You got to kind of keep that number in mind. Tesla IR sends out a summary cheat sheet to the sell side and probably to their portfolio manager investors. And they were looking for consensus about 174. So either way, it's a big number. It's about a 6-7% beat, way above my estimate. I was at about 163. I know Troy Teslake, who's another great Twitter analyst, he was about a 165, and it seemed like most of the folks on Twitter were too low. The other important thing about it was the deliveries number was 184.8, and production was about 180. Normally in the first quarter, you see production way above deliveries. And so if you want to calculate deliveries at the end of first quarter, it's down about 9 days of supply if you look at inventory. And that becomes an important number. I tried to look at where I missed. Again, I was off by about 20. And I think it's Made in China Y. As you know, they were ramping up Made in China Y starting with January 1st. And it's always hard to get the ramps right. The first month or so, it's not great. And then it kind of picks up. And we didn't have any March registration data, so we really couldn't tell what was going on in March. But I had about between Model Y and Model 3 in China, I was at about 57,000. And my guess is it's probably 6 or 7 higher than that. And then the other thing was Europe. Europe, we had 10 we call ro-ros, roll-on, roll-offs. And they come from both China and from Fremont. And we were looking for about 26,000 in Europe. And it may have been, 32, 33. So I think those are the two things. We don't get a lot of detail on these interim numbers. We won't until we hear the actual earnings at the end of the month. But I would bet that's probably where we were off. Look, it's great because I'd rather be way under than way over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think the Made in China Model Y, I think that production ramp might have been just a lot faster than people think or realize, especially in March. Might be one of the biggest factors. I mean, what do you think is going through the heads of, institutional investors, Wall Street analysts? Are they, surprised? Will they have to adjust their 2021 numbers or 2022 numbers? What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, you know me, Dave, I'm always pretty conservative. People say I sandbag. I don't sandbag. I try to get it accurate, but I try to be conservative. I try to be the person pushing on the other side when everybody's exuberant and when everybody's, feeling awful, I try to pick people up. A couple points. One is, look, my first quarter numbers, there were a couple transitory issues. So the SX refresh, we know there was nothing. There was no volume, which we expected. We didn't expect much volume in the first quarter for S and X. I was looking for about 3 and it came in at 2. But there were a lot of one-time factors that people were concerned about. And remember on the fourth quarter conference call, management said chip shortage, port delays. They mentioned the SX refresh. One of the things that we were concerned about is in China, they stopped offering the long range rear wheel drive version. So there was no long range for Model 3 in China. And in the performance version is supposed to pick up very soon after it may actually already being produced. So I think the first quarter, there were some temporary factors that we were thinking would get made up in the second, third and fourth quarter. So if you have no SX refresh in the first quarter, you pick that up in the second, third, and fourth quarter. So bottom line is, I don't know if sell-side analysts and portfolio managers will raise their full-year numbers. And that's the key, right? The street right now is about 830 for the full year, 830,000. I would expect they come up by the amount of the beat. If you know, they beat by about 10 or 12, they may come to 840. But a lot of these were one-time factors that we were anticipating would happen in the first quarter, and either it didn't happen, obviously it didn't happen. So now the question is, you know, do you raise your estimates for all the out quarters? I'm a bull. You know, I told people, you know, I got out earlier in the year because I thought that there was some issues with first and second quarter. Obviously, that's not the case. Stock also fell, though, remember, because inflation. And we have to talk about that because that's the other thing we have to think about on Monday, because we got the employment numbers today, and they were blowout numbers as well. So we have to come back to that. So bottom line is, I do think you'll see some estimates go up. Remember, the sell side is kind of cautious on Tesla. But at the end of the day, if the full year numbers go from 830 to say 840 or 850 or even 900, you're going to see people take their estimates up for the year. And that's what drives the stock price. People don't, you know, move their price targets around, and portfolio managers don't get in and out on a quarter. But if they feel this is a secular beat and there's a secular change going on, you know, maybe there's a lot more EV adoption going on, then they'll take their numbers up, you know, for the full year and in the out years. And that's what you want to see if you think the stock price should move materially higher.
Mm-hmm. You tweeted that you expect, you know, three Gordons or each Gordon is about $20 each, so $60 or about a 10% pop. What goes through your mind when you're thinking 10% pop? I mean, yeah. How do you think about that?
Okay. So look, they beat by about 7%. So that's kind of a starting point. The inflation numbers were not inflation, but the employment numbers, the non-farm payrolls were very strong. They came in at 916. The street was looking for 650 in new payrolls. And you saw the 10-year treasury yield, the treasury market was open today, jump about 5 basis points to 172. And as we've talked about, and I would argue it's the reason all growth stocks have been getting trashed so far in the first quarter, when interest rates go up, long-term interest rates go up, long-duration growth stocks are down. And it's mathematical. And if you think about a PE of 50, the denominator, when you're calculating it, it's 1 over R minus G, and R is the interest rate, it's the cost of capital. When that rate goes up, okay, so let's suppose that denominator, which a 50 multiple means denominator is 2%. If that denominator goes to 2.5%, because interest rates go up 50 basis points, that PE is falling to 40, okay? And so a lot of people are worried that inflation is going to get out of control and the Fed's going to have to clamp down. And then, you know, 10-year rates are going to zoom much higher. If it stops at 2%, nobody's going to care. But today's employment number it's a great number from a GDP standpoint, but it's a bad number from an inflation standpoint. So come Monday morning, as we've been seeing for most mornings, you'll see interest rates up, you know, probably a good 5, maybe 10 basis points. And so that's going to be the competing pressure on all growth stocks, not just Tesla, but if you own Shopify or you own Zoom, anything with what we call long duration, where all the cash flows are in the tail, you know, that seems to be the issue so far this year, that people are taking money out of long duration growth stocks. So back to your question about portfolio managers, at the end of the day, they're going to come in and they're going to see about a 7% beat, but they're also going to see on the other side, inflation looks like it's worse, and therefore interest rates are going up, and therefore the discount rate you use to come up with a PE on Tesla is going to be less. You got to kind of put together. I still think you're going to see three Gordons on Monday. I think a Gordon, for people don't know, is Gordon Johnson's old price target at 20. Now he's at 67. He's still low on the street. And I made a joke that, you know, he was the only one who got close on this number. He had 188,000. So he will probably take his price target down because they missed according to him. So I hope he goes back to $20. Then we can have Gordon's equal $20 again. That would be quite fun.
Yeah, I was thinking on Gordon's price or his Q1 estimate. I'm thinking that was a joke or something. You know, he just probably like gave some high number and then Tesla actually reached it almost.
I used to be a sell-side analyst. Look, and if you're this is tricks of the trade. When you're long a stock or you have a buy on a stock, you want to keep your estimates low because you want to show a beat. When you go out to the sales force the next morning and you want to report what happened with earnings or deliveries, you want to say they beat your estimate. And look, nowadays people are smart enough to know there's consensus estimates and you can figure out what they are. when you're short a stock or you have a sell rating on a stock, you put your numbers up high so that you could say they missed. But Gordon's numbers were so high that I don't think, and I don't think he has a firm anymore. I'm not sure how he's going to position this to his clients, whatever it is, come Monday morning, because his price target is 67. I'm sure he will position it as being negative in some way.
Yeah.
But for the average analyst who's got a, let's say a buy on the stock, they're going to come in, explain to their sales team, they beat across the board. They beat, even though the volumes had no SX refresh in there, one. Two, they're going to have to say they only have 9 days of inventory, which is very low, which means, you know, you've got a lot of demand that's going into the second quarter. You don't have a lot of inventory to supply it. And one of the concerns I had going into the delivery numbers was the second quarter numbers were way high, in my opinion. They were at 199. And I'm at about 175 because I figured, you know, any of these issues that were going on, like the SS refresh, no long range offered in China, they will be resolved in the second quarter. So I was higher. I think what will drive the stock price is whether the street takes up estimates for the full year. Okay. And so you've got a, let's call it a 12,000 beat for the first quarter. Does that carry through the end of the year? Probably. But do they go further and say, okay, now we've got the Biden EV credit going in. We could talk about that if you want. Mm-hmm. That'll increase demand in the second half. And secularly, is EV adoption growing much quicker than we thought? And I would argue it probably is. I mean, EVs are the trend. It's the big thing. And you got a lot of talking about it in the media. Our forecast was based on an EV adoption rate this year of about 4.8%, up from 3% last year. And when I talk about EV, I talk about, you know, battery EVs, not the plug-in types or not the hybrid types. That number could be 6 or 7%. And if that's the case, Tesla, who owns about 23% share of that EV, will be a beneficiary. And this is the debate I get in with the bears all the time. And I talk to some of them. Their view is, as competitors come in with really good new EVs, and people talk about the Mustang Mach-E, it's going to take share from Tesla. And my view is, I don't agree, because I think what happens is people decide they're going to buy an EV and they go to the Ford dealer, they go to the Audi dealer, they go to the Volkswagen dealer, and they get interested. Then they start doing some research and they start, you know, getting online. They see that Tesla performance, 0 to 60, is faster. Tesla battery range is better. Tesla technology is better. The consumer ratings are higher. They've got, you know, so many more charging stations out there. And then they find a neighbor who owns one. And, you know, the word of mouth on Tesla is wonderful. So I think what happens is when there's a new launch of an EV, whether it be Audi or Volkswagen or Porsche or whoever, it gets people interested in an EV. And then they go do some research and they buy a Tesla. Because it hasn't hurt Tesla. We've had new competitive offerings for 5 years. And Tesla's share hasn't moved down. It's moved up. Its share of EVs keeps moving up. So that could be the other factor that I think is important. And we don't know that until after the fact. But I would bet you, between all the media talking about EVs, you know, if Biden gets his bill passed, that will definitely accelerate EV adoption. Europe, you know, they've already got incentives in place to buy EVs. You could just see EV adoption really accelerating from, you know, 3% where it was last year. It could be 6 or 7% this year, and that would be very, very bullish.
I'm curious, how do you look at long-term interest rates going forward? I mean, let's say in 2021, do you have some type of probabilities in your mind of a certain percent chance that this goes above 2%? Versus, yeah, you know, it stays around under 2%. How do you manage, you know, all of that?
Yeah, look, my view is not consensus. Consensus view is that we're going to have GDP growth this year of 7-8%. Okay, we had negative GDP growth. This is in the U.S. of -3.5 last year. So if you average the two, let's take a positive 8 and a -3.5. That's about 2-2.5 over 2 years. But the consensus view is inflation is going to rear its ugly head, because 8% growth is a lot. And so therefore, you're going to see inflation pick up, and the Fed is going to have to clamp down on short-term rates because they're going to realize they're behind the curve. And that's what I call the bond vigilantes. And that's why you see every rate, every morning, seemingly, the 10-year, which is a compilation of all the short-term rates, and the Fed can only control short-term rates. It can't control long-term rates. You see the bond vigilantes keep pushing up the 10-year yield, where this morning it's 1.72. 2 months ago it was 1.05. And so to me, that is more what caused, you know, Tesla to fall so sharply than any worries about first half. It's just all, and you look at Shopify, which is another stock I like, that stock got crushed. If you were to put two charts up there, Shopify and Tesla look pretty similar. And so I think, and I'm not consensus here, I think this is the worst recession we've had since the 1930 depression. I still think there's plenty of slack in the economy. And again, I look at it as even if we have 8 or 9% GDP growth this year, we had -3.5% last year, you average the two, it's not exorbitant growth over a 2-year period. And you have to look at it over a 2-year period. So I think we're going to get to the middle of the year. We're not going to see actual inflation manifest itself. All right now is people expecting inflation is going to pick up. And I'd say the world is evenly divided. There's bond vigilantes, and then there's people, you know, like Jay Powell, who's our Fed chairman, saying, nope, this is transitory. This is one time, and we don't see the inflation yet, and we're going to keep rates low until 2023. So I think this is my feeling. We'll get to the middle of the year. We won't see inflation materialize. And inflation meaning 2 to 3%. We may get some transitory inflation, but not long-term inflation, secular inflation. And then those 10-year rates will stabilize. If we could just get to 2% and stop 2% on the 10-year, then the growth stocks will do just fine. The worry is that it's not going to stop at 2. It's going to go to 3 or 4. And at that point, you know, then growth stocks really start getting hammered. So the world's divided on this, Dave. It's not, there's no one answer. I think you got the bond vigilantes who think inflation's already out of control. And then you throw this $3 trillion or $2 trillion infrastructure stimulus on top of it. It makes it even worse. And then you get the other folks like me who are saying, no, this is just temporary. It's transitory. You're going to have big numbers for a couple months. You're going to see some short-term inflation. And Jay Powell's in this camp. Janet Yellen's in this camp. And inflation's not a problem. So we shouldn't take rates up. If the Fed sticks to its guns and says, nope, we're not taking rates up, I think we're going to be fine. If it starts raising rates, like goes backwards, says, we were wrong, let's start raising rates, then you're going to see more pressure. 10-year rates will go higher, and long-duration growth stocks like Tesla are going to get hurt.
Got it. I noticed in your portfolio, it seems like you have a decent number of stocks. How do you keep up with all the different companies? Like, I'm curious, how many stocks do you have on your portfolio that you're tracking?
I have about 30.
30, wow.
You know, I'm what I call a disciplined growth investor. And, you know, my partner and I are, you know, we're both very disciplined about valuation. So if you think about ARK, ARK is disruptive innovation. And I used to work with Kathy. She's a great investor. She's very good at focusing on innovation. I think we're very good at thinking about sustainable growth. And sustainability doesn't mean climate change. It means companies are going to change the world. And, you know, you think about a Google, how it changes the world. So I look for big mega trends, you know, 24/7 information, automation, living longer, clean energy. You know, I look for companies that are going to change the world, but I don't want to overpay for them. So as you know, with Tesla, you know, people have gotten into debates with me about autonomy and robo-taxi and stuff like that, which, you know, you've had lots of people on your show that talk about it. At the heart of my investment process is coming up with a fair value for the earnings or the cash flow. So when I look at, you know, like a Tesla, I don't include robotaxi because I don't, as an incremental value, because I don't believe outside of automotive and the take rate on FSD, you're going to see that much incremental value. So when I look at companies like a Google or Shopify, I try to come up with a fair value. And so when I discount back, usually I like to use earnings and PEs, future earnings and future PEs. Like Tesla, I use 2025 earnings and a 2025 PE based on the growth rate after 2025. I come up with a value of 1450 on Tesla in 2025. I discount it back. And now here's back to your earlier question about inflation. If inflation keeps going higher, I have an 11.6% discount rate I use today based on a risk-free rate of 2. if the discount rate of 2 goes to 3, okay, the value I'm coming up with for Tesla is going to go down. And precisely, if it goes to 3, I've calculated it's about $750 instead of $960. But with every stock that I own in my portfolio, I have a price target. And if, you know, the stock price is below my price target, so Tesla today is at, you know, let's call it 670, it'll probably be, you know, above 700 come Monday, versus the 960, the percent discount versus what I think it should be worth in today's dollars is how I size my positions. So Tesla, it's still a decent sized position for me. I got out of it, as you know, got back in it. I bought some at 620. And then I doubled it at 570. So I still have a decent sized Tesla position, contrary to what some people think. And I do routinely sell calls against it. It's something that when I make a mistake, and I do make mistakes, obviously, you know, I'll just roll them to the following week, because usually you don't get 2 consecutive weeks of Tesla going through the roof. Yeah. And usually I wait till Mondays to sell calls, because, you know, Tesla seems to go up on Mondays for some reason.
Were you selling cover calls this past week?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Because nope. I noticed like Friday and Monday was down. So I know one of your rules is you don't sell on down days.
No.
And then there's delivery numbers. And that's another one of your rules, right? You're not selling cover calls.
I don't
on
like to sell
events.
When there's events coming that I can't quantify, you know, and I do, but I don't like to do it, because you just don't know. And look, not in my wildest dreams, I couldn't have come up with this number that Tesla posted today. And, you know, I still think it's a stunning, stunning number. Yeah. So that's why, you know, come Monday morning, I do think the stock will be up.
Yeah. Valuation. Have you noticed, I mean, in the past, like, you know, after COVID, it seems like the multiples the market is giving to growth stocks have just skyrocketed, and we're having to push out our forecasts, you know, for multiple years. So we're doing multiples off of, you know, growth stocks 4, 5, 6 years into the future.
Yeah.
I mean, have you noticed like 2 years ago, it didn't feel like this, you know, it's like you could, you know, give a decent, I'm just saying you could give a decent multiple, like a couple year, two or 3 years out, right? You give a lower multiple, but now you have to go 4, 5, 6 years out to give a high multiple. I mean, what are your thoughts? Is this reasonable?
I do think it's reasonable. And again, if you believe that 10-year treasuries will stop at 2%, okay, and use Tesla as an example, you know, what I do is I add the what I call an equity risk premium to that risk-free rate, multiply it times the beta. And that's almost like a cost of capital, if you want to think about it that way. Tesla has a high beta. It's 1.6. So when you look at risk-adjusted returns, Tesla has to have a higher anticipated return, because it's got higher risk. So it's almost like a penalty because the beta is so high. And that's the way portfolio managers think. So I have an 11.6% discount rate on Tesla. I have about a 8.5% rate on Google, because Google's like a bond equivalent. It doesn't really move. I mean, it feels like it moves. But when you discount earnings or cash flows back with Google, you can use a lower discount rate. So I think people have stretched some of those rules the last couple of years. But if you look back historically, the equity risk premium, meaning the difference between what equities earn versus bonds earn, it's about 6%. So you got to start with 2 plus 6, that's 8%. But as the risk-free rate, which is the 10-year treasury, goes up, to be honest with your valuation, you have to move that discount rate up, which is going to put pressure on those multiples. Now, try to explain that versus the fact that multiples seem to get higher, like on SPACs, and there's been, you know, a lot of companies that have come public that don't have any earnings, and I'll own some. But when I do valuation on things like Uber or Bumble, which is another stock I own, it's a dating service, I try to go out where there is some earnings, and then, you know, I discount that back based on where I think the growth will flatten. I don't always use 2025. I do with Tesla. Sometimes I go out even further. Sometimes I go out less. But if you put everything in present value dollars, you're keeping your analysis honest. And that's why I don't think it's an absurd thing to see multiples that are infinite. And just like a couple of years ago, if you were buying Tesla, it didn't make any money, right? But you had to come up with a valuation. So the right way to do it with growth stocks is you got to go out to 24, 25. Usually when the growth starts slow, you know, after a ramp up, that's usually the year I pick. And then I come up with earnings for that year, and then I discount it back. Then I try to put a multiple in 2025 on what those earnings are, and then I discount that back from 2025 to the current. And I do that with all my companies, and it's a good way of keeping yourself honest. But yeah, there's some stuff that's really overvalued out there. And, you know, I don't want to go into names, but some of them, you know, I just don't like.
Yeah. I'm wondering, what percent is Tesla of your portfolio? And then what are a couple other, let's say, big positions that you have, some other company names?
Yeah, I don't want to get into disclosing that, but I'll just say, you know, I've had it at times up to 20%, even 25%. And today it's less than that, but it's still a big position.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
And, you know, I mentioned one name I like. I like Google because, you know, it's got search, and I view Google as a reopening play. I mean, even though a lot of people think it's stay at home, because as people go out, they search for things. They search for restaurants. They search for, you know, places they can go. They have the cloud. They have YouTube. You know, I own a lot of things that are more in the media space. I own Snap. I own Bumble. I own Facebook because of Instagram. So, you know, I like growthy names. But I also will play things that are mispriced. You know, so I was in JetBlue for the longest time. I bought Lulu the other day. It hasn't worked for me because, you know, they basically guided. The quarter was great. They guided higher. And Lulu always at the beginning of the year tries to put full year numbers out that it can beat and raise. You know, that's the phrase. So I bought it at, I don't know, 310, and it finished at like 301. So I haven't made any money on it. But I'll probably put about 20% names in my portfolio just that I think are just mispriced for whatever reason. They get beaten up. They're growth names. They get beaten up. And then I think the street just, you know, they punish them over. They over punish them for something short term. And with Lulu, it's you know, again, I think about mega trends. People want to get in shape. People want to live longer. Okay. So it plays to that trend. It's a great management team. It's got a great brand. It's, you know, the top, it's the very top brand in the athletic wear business, Nike and Lulu. But they basically gave guidance that, you know, I thought was just too conservative for the year, which ends next January. And then every quarter they'll beat and then they'll raise and they'll beat. And that's what Lulu always does. So that's like a type of stock I would own. JetBlue, I bought some RCL. I've been looking at Wynn Resorts, you know, stuff that's reopening, but it's more growthy. I don't like, you know, people say, well, why don't you own Volkswagen? I struggle with a Volkswagen. It's not a growth stock. And, you know, it's got some growth segments, but I can't own something like Volkswagen or GM. It just, the EV piece of it is too small. And it's funny. I watch CNBC sometimes when I'm not getting annoyed by it. And they say, well, we should be buying Volkswagen because it's so cheap, or GM because it's so cheap if we're going to play the EV credit. And I laugh at that. I say, that's silly. It's 2% of their profits. It's 2% of their volume is EVs. So they're not going to get much mileage out of this.
Yeah, I see that. I'm curious, with so many different companies that you're tracking, like, where do you get these ideas to invest, and how do you keep up? I mean, obviously one person can't live like 10 lives to research everything. Yeah. So, I mean, are you subscribing to paid services? Do you have like a team? Do you have newsletters or something that you follow? Like, where do you get this
info? I have a partner I work with. He's a very experienced PM. I've worked with him for many years. And, you know, we're actually going to be, I don't want to do any commercials because I'm not allowed to, but we'll be launching a sustainable fund soon, which you'll hear more about. But it'll be a concentrated portfolio, high conviction, and it'll be, you know, 30-ish type names. And so we start with I don't want to use the word quant because I'm definitely not a quant. I'm a bottom-up research guy. But, you know, a screen that looks for high growth, high ROE, clean balance sheets, you know, we look for sustainable growth, growth that can be sustained for many periods. And we can use quant service that, you know, gives us, you know, they take thousands of names and rank them into deciles. And that's a good starting point. We can look at what ranks the highest based on the factors that we think are important. Return on capital, high growth, high unit growth is a great predictor of long-term value. And then we look at the mega trends. We have a list of about 10 to 12 mega trends. 24/7 information, entertainment, e-commerce, electronic pay, automation, healthy living, living longer, clean energy is one of our mega trends. And then we try to find names that best fit in that. And then what we try to do is we start researching them and try to, you know, build models and figure out what are these things really worth? How long? The key variable, quite frankly, in the model is how long is the growth rate going to be sustained? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times you get great growth and then competitors come in and then the growth rate basically reverts to the norm. But if you can find a company like Google or Amazon, where the growth rate is going to be sustained for many years, you can justify the valuation. Now, it's interesting about Google. It only trades for about 22 times next year's earnings. I use 22 earnings to size things because 21 is going to be a crapshoot. Nobody knows. You know, how do you put a 21 earnings multiple on a movie theater or JetBlue? You can't, because a lot of things still aren't open, or RCL, which is Royal Caribbean. You can't do it because they're not even sailing today. Mm-hmm. So I use 22 earnings for everything right now, and that actually, you know, allows me to compare across. But when I look at Google, Google's trading at literally 22 times earnings next year, and it's growing. It's you can look at paid clicks, you can look at revenues, you can look at earnings, you can look at cash flows. But let's call it 18 to 20% growth. That's 1.2 times growth, which is very cheap. And this is my most frustrating thing talking about Tesla with people. When I look at Tesla, I've got about $9 a share in 22 earnings. This year, I think people will take their estimates up. So let's call it, you know, 450 is where I'm, the street's below that. But I think it'll be close to $9 in 2022. You know, at 670, it's trading at 70, 75 times earnings. But it's growing its volumes at 50%, which means it's got to be growing its earnings faster than that. So where are you going to find in the mega cap space something that grows at 50% plus? You're not, okay? And we're going to find something that grows it, you know, enough to justify the multiple. It literally grows into its multiple, because once you get to, say, 2025, you know, I've got $29 in earnings. That's 20 times. That's where the S&P trades, you know? And so that's kind of the way I think about the world. I look for sustainable growth. I want to be valuation disciplined. And then, you know, I try to keep it conservative. I try not to, you know, get crazy about valuations. And that's why I know people get frustrated and say, well, you should be including robotaxi at you know, twice, 2x what you count automotive. Well, I don't see that.
Mm-hmm. You know? So sure. I try to stay. Twitter follower of Giulio says he wants to know if you could share your average annual return. If you can't disclose that, I'm just curious, do you have a target kind of annual return you're trying to shooting for?
I look for stocks that can, and I think Kathy has a similar target, or Ron Barron has a similar, but most growth investors look for target. You want the stock to double in 5 years. And if you figure out that, well, that's about a 15% return. So I'm not trying to shoot the lights out. I want conservative growth, disciplined growth. So if the portfolio can double in the next 5 years, I think we'd be doing a great job. Given that the S&P generally is about 6 points above risk-free rates. So if, you know, if you believe treasuries are going to be 2 and you think the S&P is going to be 6 above it, that's 8. So we get about double what, you know, what the S&P is. And the other thing you got to look at when you're looking at fund managers, you got to look at risk-adjusted returns. Because if somebody has, just think about it, you have a portfolio of stocks that have a beta of 2, okay? You're going to have huge upside, but you're going to have huge downside. And so I always try to keep my beta, overall portfolio beta, you know, closer to 1-ish. But, you know, with a Tesla at 1.6, I would have to have something to offset. So I never get that low. Mm-hmm. But, you know, maybe 1.1, 1.2, because I want it to be a lower risk growth portfolio. To me, that's what I like owning. I like owning lower risk growth stocks. Mm-hmm. And makes Tesla sense. I wouldn't say it's the most volatile of the stocks I own. I think Shopify is probably more volatile, but it's up there, you know, and 1.6 is a big beta for a mega cap stock.
Yeah, definitely. I follow Shopify and Tesla. They have amazingly similar, you know, movement sometimes with their stock price.
It's a great company.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful company. You know, they don't make money. They have a huge market cap. But I usually, with stocks like that, unlike Tesla, and I have a lot of confidence in Tesla, I keep the position size pretty low. Mm-hmm. You know, Tesla, like I said, I've had it up as high as 20-25%.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. I want to go back to the delivery number. So I'm going to throw out something. I want you to poke some holes in it. So, sure. You know, when Tesla was, you know, everyone in the Tesla community, most people were expecting, you know, 160 to 165, maybe 170 deliveries. And I was thinking, hey, you know, maybe Tesla hits 800, 850 deliveries for 2021. I try to be conservative as well. But when Tesla knocks it out of the ballpark with 185,000 deliveries, right? And that this is without refreshed Model S and X, without Berlin, you know, and Austin coming on.
Long range Model 3 in China.
Exactly. And yeah, and Model Y in Shanghai is still ramping. It's not even fully ramped at all. So when I look at this, it's almost 200,000 in a quarter. How, I mean, yeah, right? So how is Tesla not going to deliver at least 900,000 vehicles in 2021?
They might. And look, I want to review things. Not that the company gave you that much information, but we'll get probably in a couple of weeks, we'll start getting March registration data from around the world. I mean, even now you'll start getting some. Mm-hmm. You're right. If you look at capacity, you know, like take the fourth quarter release, they were, I think, 990 was their stated capacity. They're adding 150, which is the Model Y capacity expansion in China. So then they're up to, let's call it 115. Then you throw Berlin on, you know, at 250. You throw Austin on, another 250. And to your point, by the end of the year, you're up to 1516. So how could they not deliver 900 this year? They may. And I think with a 180, you know, 185 type number, you got to think to yourself, okay, could they do 200 in second quarter? Maybe. I mean, I think 190 would be pushing it, but they could do 200. It's possible. But then once you have Berlin and Austin, it depends how quickly those come on. They could definitely get to 900 this year. I'm still kind of probably in the 830, 840 range.
I mean,
the street is 830.
Yeah, with Q2 though, I mean, why would it be only 190 when you have Model S and S refresh, right, getting pushed out, and you have Model Y made in China just, you know, starting to ramp up more in Q2? Wouldn't you expect kind of, you know, a bigger jump than just, you know, 5,000 deliveries?
Well, remember, Model S and X, yes, you have refresh, so it's kind of a brand new car. And you're probably going to have great demand. And in fact, again, they called it out in the delivery release, tells me they're seeing orders for S and X that are probably pretty good. Okay. So that's one of the things I want to rethink about, but they don't sell that many, you know, if, you know, normally it's, you know, they only sold two, but normally it might be 15 a quarter. So you could probably add maybe 15 or 20, maybe for second quarter, but yeah, then you're up to 195, 200. And then you got to believe that next quarter, made in China Y is going to be even bigger than it was this quarter, because January, probably through early February, you were still in the ramp up phase. Mm-hmm. So you're right. You probably could get a number that's bigger, but then you got to weigh it against, you know, you got more and more competitors coming out, but you've always had competitors coming out, would be, you know, what the Super Bowl would say. So look, if I were a betting man, and I have a $960 price target, I'm long the stock, you know, it's one of my biggest positions. I would say, yeah, there's a good chance it could do 900, and that therefore the stock should have even a higher price target than 960, because my 960 is just based on literally the automotive business and the energy business, but the energy business is tiny. You know, I don't have anything for anything else, but just based on the automotive business, I could have higher than a 960 price target.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And then again, what you have to do is you have to weigh that against the fact that, so the numerator is the earnings piece, but the denominator, when you're thinking about valuation, is the cost of capital. And if inflation is really, you know, much higher than people think, and the 10-year has to go to 3, mm-hmm. I'm telling you what portfolio managers are going to do. They're going to continue to reduce their valuations of growth stocks. That's just the way they're trained. Mm-hmm. And you may say, well, that's stupid, but that's what they do. Yeah. That's what you've seen so mm-hmm. far.
Yeah, definitely.
I would argue most of the reduction of Tesla from, you know, its peak of 880 to, you know, 600, and now it's back to 670. Not all, but probably 2/3 of it was because interest rates. Mm-hmm. And 1/3 of it was probably because of these temporary factors in the first quarter and second quarter. And a lot of times when I'm telling people this, I'm not saying I agree with them. It's just what it is. It's the way the market behaves. And so you got to get the market right. The market is what's judging your returns. And so if you believe that this is the market's, I don't think the market's correct about inflation, but it is what it is. And you just have to play by the market's rules.
Yeah, definitely. Biden, Biden tax credit. So do you, a couple questions on this. Do you think the Biden tax credit for EVs, let's say, you know, $7,500 tax credit or something along that line, do you think it'll pass? Do you think it'll be capped similarly to the past tax credit? And do you think this, I mean, how do you weigh the pros and cons? Is this just a temporary kind of boost short term for Tesla? Does it hurt Tesla long term? Because, you know, after they reach the cap rather quickly, other companies will have this, you know, credit while Tesla doesn't. I mean, yeah, how do you wrap your head around this tax credit issue?
Well, first of all, I don't think it'll be 7,500. I think it'll be 10,000 because that's what everybody in Washington's telling me, that Schumer, who's running this, and he's Senate Majority Leader, they're working on a $10,000 assumption. And it'd be nice when we can get the budget, what they call the skinny budget. It was supposed to be out today, but I saw something. I thought I saw something that said that they're not going to get it out this week. So let's just suppose that it's $10,000. The other thing that I'm most interested in is, will they leave it uncapped? And remember, there's another person besides Schumer, Senator Schumer, Senate Majority Leader. So he's the most influential person in the Senate. And don't worry about the House, because the House, the Dems have a big advantage. They can get through anything in the House. The Senate is tricky because they only have 50 votes and they can't lose one. Schumer and Stabenow, Debbie Stabenow is from Michigan. She's the other person running the EV part of this infrastructure bill. That's important because Michigan's home of General Motors. General Motors is in the same boat as Tesla, where they've already run through their cap. The cap's 200. So I would bet, given that GM wants to, you know, they're very aggressive at trying to get more EVs, I would bet that they will also push to have it be uncapped. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the way Washington works, it's staffs working with staffs. You know, Biden, you know, he's like a CEO, but, you know, he's older. And, you know, I don't think he's going to get into the details. So it's going to be his staff that's working on this bill. And you got to look at who in the Senate and who in the House are going to work on it. Senate's more important because they have to keep 50 votes. And again, when you bring it back to this inflation data from today, or the employment numbers from today, the Republicans are going to scream all weekend, you don't need any more stimulus, because they don't think we should have another $2 or $3 trillion stimulus for infrastructure. So I would say you'll get a skinny budget. We'll see what's in it for assumptions for the EV. There's $174 billion in this infrastructure bill for EVs broadly. We don't know if it's 10,000, it's 7,500. I know it's over 8 years. Okay, that's the way they worded it. I can't come up with $174 billion. So what you do is you multiply the number of EVs you think are going to be sold. There's about 17 million vehicles sold, light trucks and cars, in America each year. You know, even if you did 10% EVs, and last year was 2 in the U.S., you can't, for 8 years, you're not coming up with $174 billion. So I believe they're probably using 10,000 as a blueprint. So what happens next? The skinny bill comes out probably next week. At some point, somebody in the House and somebody in the Senate will draft legislation to get this infrastructure bill passed. And both of them will have different bills because they operate kind of independently. And then you'll have jostling back and forth, you know, trying to figure out how do we get the votes. With Dems, with the House, it doesn't matter. The Dems can do whatever they want. But the Senate, they can't lose any other Dems, and they would hope to get at least one Republican. But most of these pieces of legislation you see is the Republicans stick together. So at the end of the day, I think you'll get some vote. Pelosi has said July 4th in the House. Senate usually goes after the House, so let's call it middle of July. And then they have what they call reconciliation, where they reconcile the bills, because it can only be one bill, one new law. And I think handicap, I think because they have 50 Dems and they have, you know, the vice president makes the tiebreaker vote, I think they'll get it passed. And I think you'll have a $10,000 EV credit and it'll be uncapped. And wow, that'll be huge. And so here's the big thing. Is it retroactive or not? Because once, I don't think it's really affected people's buying behavior. I've said that all along. I don't think people really pay attention to that type of news that much. I mean, most people do not watch CNBC, and most people definitely do not watch, you know, political shows. I think as long as, you know, it doesn't affect second quarter, because people are thinking, wow, if I buy an EV in third quarter, then at least I'll get this EV credit, then I don't think it really impacts second quarter. But it'll be made up, right? So again, don't look at quarter to quarter, look at the full year numbers. If they pass an EV credit, let's say middle of July, it'll really stimulate demand in the third and fourth quarter. It's like a price cut. And this is what people don't understand. I mean, you understand this, but a lot of bears don't understand this. And even a lot of media folks don't understand this. That'll be $10,000 that or even $7,500 that Tesla doesn't get today. So you're basically putting them on even footing with everybody else. And that'll be huge for Tesla. So if you told me tomorrow that, you know, you had a little, you know, secret person in the Congress and you knew that this was going to actually get passed and it was $10,000 and you thought it was over 50% probability, you would raise your number up to whatever the capacity is this year. You know, exactly. If it's a million, whatever the number is.
I mean, if it's uncapped, like that's crazy because, I mean, I'm looking at the major parties. So it's GM and it's Ford, it's Tesla. Are there any other big parties that are going to be lobbying for this?
I mean, what I've heard is Biden is probably going to limit it to U.S. made autos. So if Toyota has a plant in the U.S. or Volkswagen has a plant in the U.S., that'll count. Yeah. But if you're bringing it in from another country, it doesn't count. So yeah, all the auto manufacturers in the U.S. have a voice, but it's, you know, it's GM, then Ford, Chrysler. You know, Tesla's up there now, and it's important because, you know, they're a big beneficiary of what Biden wants to do. I actually joked. I said, you know, if Tesla was smart, they'd get Biden or the White House, you know, some Model X they could drive around and just give it to him. You know, yeah. And Biden, you know, but somebody says, yeah, but he's going to get his head stuck on one of the, you know, the doors, the stopping doors as they go up. So yeah. That would not be a good thing.
Yeah, Model Y.
Yeah. Model Y. Yeah. You can get in and out of it. But yeah. I think we're going to hear a lot more about it. And the more people hear about it, the more I think people get excited about it. But you are going to have the Republicans that are going to, you know, piss all over it. They're going to say, look, we've got enough stimulus. You're putting all kinds of junk in this bill. I mean, the $174 billion was for EVs, and it's $2.25 trillion. I think roads and bridges were about $250. And then there's all this other stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the Republicans are basically saying, you don't need all this stuff. And they're already saying that. You'll hear it all weekend on the news shows. But I think at the end of the day, they will trim it back. But EVs is something that Biden, it's near and dear to his heart. When he got elected, he talked about four big initiatives. And it was COVID, it was getting the economy up and running, it was racial inequality, and it was clean energy. And that's something that, you know, he feels that's his signature. And so he's not going to let go of that. He's just going to keep pushing. And if he pushes it till the end of the day and lets other things slide, that's fine. But that EV credit is going to stay in there. The question is, will it be uncapped? I don't care if it's 7,500 or 10,000. To me, keep it in at 7,500. That could be something that they compromise on to get the number down. But to your point, it's got to be uncapped because if they put it in at the cap's 200 today and they change the language, I think it's 30D in the IRS code. If they change it so it's 500, that doesn't do Tesla any good.
Yeah.
You know, if in the US they're selling, you know, let's call it 300, 400 a year.
Yeah. I mean, if you work out the numbers, even if you do $100 billion of, you know, tax credit or rebates, I mean, that's a lot of cars, you know, we're talking about, if you do 10,000 for a million, that's 10 billion. So you have to do 10 million cars. And if you drop it to 5,000, you know, you're talking about 20 million cars. And who's going to sell all those cars? You know, is like Ford or GM going to sell, you know, 20 million cars? It's like, and then I'm wondering, do you think Tesla would raise their prices at all, like especially at the low end, because there's so much demand?
It's possible. Hey, look, I'm in perfect agreement with Elon's strategy. Bring the prices down in line with variable costs. As battery costs come down, they should keep pushing the prices down to get more EV adoption. I would sacrifice margin to get more EV adoption. And again, if you put a $7,500 credit or a $10,000 credit on a Ford Mach-E or a Volkswagen ID4, assuming it's produced in the U.S., you know, you're bringing the price way down. And again, what people do is they get excited about EVs and they say, you know, we really should buy an EV because we're very concerned about climate change. You talk to people, you know, who are under the age of 40, and this is what is like their top three issues is clean energy and stopping, you know, the climate from changing so rapidly. My kids who are conservative like me, they all believe in climate change. They're very EV friendly. And again, you talk to a kid who's 30, a person who's 30, you know, they all love Teslas. Mm-hmm. And so this is where I go back to that. If you're bringing out a Volkswagen branded EV, I don't know if it has the cachet that a Tesla has. I've actually been surprised that the Mustang Mach-E has gotten as much excitement as it has, because it's got a gas-guzzling heritage. And I drove it, and it feels nice. It looks decent. Once you're inside it, the technology is nowhere near what the Tesla is. It's no comparison. But I think, people want to buy clean energy vehicles, and I think you're going to see EV adoption go through the roof much quicker, and everybody's got to take their models up and their assumptions up if this tax credit in an uncapped way changes. Because to me right now, I've got 4.8% in 2021. I think I've got to go into 7 next year, and then it ramps up to about 24% by 2025. And that's global. But the U.S. has lagged the rest of the world for a long time. Yeah. Any of the adoption. Mm-hmm. So that could be a big number.
Yeah. So I want to toss out something and I want to ask if your model is your price target. I think it's 960 for the next 6 to 12 months is considering this or taking this into consideration or not. So full self-driving. So I know longer term, you're a little bit skeptical in terms of the dominance that Tesla can have with, autonomous driving. But in the short term, I have an idea. So if Tesla can actually roll out this beta successfully, and over the next 6 months, or let's say over the next 6 months or so, it goes to wide release, people are impressed. How is Tesla full self-driving as an option take rate not going to double? And then won't that increase margins that Tesla gets per car? Sure. And are any analysts really expecting that this year? And is your price target really, incorporating that?
Well, here's the problem, Dave. And again, I don't want to come off as being bearish because I'm a bull, okay? Mm-hmm. But, today's take rate in the U.S. is mid-20s, Europe's mid-teens, China's 2, So you put it together and you get about a mid-teens take rate at $10,000. And people say, well, that's because they don't realize what it does. Well, it's true. It's not operable yet. And so the question then becomes is, let's pose, as you said, you pose the question, you have FSD wide release and it works and you don't have a bunch of accidents. At $10,000, and again, this is my view, and I could be totally wrong. I view FSD as another reason to buy a Tesla, okay? Just like the battery is longer range, the 0-60 is quicker, the look and feel inside is very high tech compared to any other EV you get into, even the Taycan. So if you have FSD that's actually working and people say, you know what, they're getting pretty close, or I can just let the car drive itself. It's not there yet because it won't be, right? Maybe at the end of the year. To me, if I can buy an option for $10,000 so I can curl up in the backseat of the car and tell the car where to go, is it worth $10,000 to the average person? Not me, but to the average person? Maybe. And so then you get into this debate with people about, well, what if there's a MMR, monthly recurring revenue, a subscription model, where they're charging, 99 is the number I come up with, because, and this is where people miss this, at the end of 5 years or 6 years or 7 years, when you get rid of your Tesla, it's got a value. So when you trade it in or you sell it, just like the performance package, it has a value attached to it. So if you pay $10,000 and let's say in 5 years it's worth $5,000, okay, that's $5,000 divided by 60 months. It's going to be less than $100. So let's assume it's $99 because that sounds like a good number. Yeah, I could see EV, the take rate on the FSD being, much higher than what it is today if you had that type of availability. But then it goes to the second part of your question, though. How much of an advantage, using their AI-based approach will they have versus somebody who uses enhanced LiDAR or something else that it may not be as good, but it can be close, okay? And that's where I get into, debates with people that the add-on, the option itself to the EV shouldn't be worth more than the EV itself, But that's what a lot of people, including ARC, is doing. ARC is putting a value on robotaxi because they assume it's going to be so good that you could have a robotaxi network and you get a piece of it, that they think that's worth more than an EV. I just can't get there. But I would say for people like me in the street who have models, I have a line for take rate times $10,000. And to me, a $10,000 versus $99 for 5 years, it's roughly about the same. Yeah, you could assume a much higher take rate if it works really well, and it gets accorded in a level 4 autonomy rating by the government. That's not going to be an easy fix, right? You're gonna have to work at that. So I think when Elon says it'll be ready by the end of the year, he's probably right. But that doesn't mean that the government's gonna allow them to, you know, do what Phoenix, Arizona's done with Waymo. You know, where they kind of let, you know, people drive by them without driving.
Yeah, yeah.
I still don't know if you're gonna get there.
Yeah, several people on Twitter asked me to ask you about Waymo. If you have any thoughts, I think today a news came out that Waymo's CEO has stepped down after 5 years on the job. Do you have any speculative thoughts on this? Is this a worrisome sign for Waymo, or are they fine? Are they even a threat to Tesla? What are your thoughts?
I don't think Waymo's a threat. I think, you know, the other new EV makers that are coming up with their own, you know, FSD-like systems are the threat. I don't view Waymo as being a threat because it's one market. If they were a threat, they would have expanded from, I don't know if you've ever been to Phoenix. I used to live in Scottsdale, but it's a grid and it's flat, you know, and it's like, you know, it's like a perfect, like, square almost. And in Chandler, which is where Waymo is, and it's Tempe, Chandler, Ahwatukee, that area, it's very, very flat and very, very easy to drive around. You know, if you start having like the rest of Phoenix, which there's some mountains, there's mountains in like up in Scottsdale and stuff, and the roads curve, I don't know if it's going to work as well. And it's also relatively suburban where they are. They're not in downtown Phoenix. So what's interesting to me is they've been testing this for, you know, using this for a couple of years, but it really hasn't been expanded even into the rest of Phoenix. So I don't think they're a threat. I think, you know, I do worry about Google, and, you know, Baidu is obviously big in China, and, you know, you'll see some autonomous driving that is probably really, really good, but I don't think it's going to be Waymo is the biggest threat.
Okay. Videorama from the live stream is asking you, who is in second place if it's not Waymo? Do you have any ideas?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can't give you, probably have to ask somebody who's got a more of a technical background who, you know, looks at this stuff every day, but I wouldn't be able to tell you who's second place.
Okay. David Lim on the live stream says, do you guys think demand is being impacted negatively for people after the U.S. announces its EV tax credit? So yeah, in Q2, I mean, we've got this limbo phase, right? Before any tax credit is passed. Do you have any ideas of a timeline? Do you think it can be passed before the end of Q2, or do you think it's negotiations are going to extend?
No, it won't be passed before end of Q2, but I don't think it's being impacted. Obviously, the first quarter numbers were not impacted. You know, everybody's reporting record demand, not record, but, you know, very high demand for first quarter. So I don't think there's any impact currently because of the EV. I think if you need a car, you need a car, right? People buy cars when the other one gives out and they want to turn it in. I don't think it's going to cause people to necessarily, you know, say, I'm going to wait till third quarter. And you don't know. It may be done retroactively. It's never been done like that before. Washington, usually they don't like to give money retroactively. But it's going to be different. The other thing that's interesting is the rebate versus the credit. That could be huge, too. And Biden has talked about it in both terms. He's talked about it as a rebate. Mm-hmm. And that would mean that, you know, at the point of purchase, you get the reduction, and then the manufacturer is sending in they're giving you the rebate and they're getting reimbursed by the government. That could be very interesting if it's a rebate, mm-hmm. because then it really does feel like a price cut. Where when it's a tax credit, you don't always think about it when you're buying a car. You don't get it right away. You're paying full price. That's another reason why I don't believe it. It's impacting volumes today.
Mm-hmm. Another question is the 28% corporate tax rate. So, you know, Biden's proposing from moving from 21 to 28%. What's the impact of that? How do you wrap your head around, you know, that?
We would have to take it up in our models. I use 20% as a tax rate for Tesla right now, you know, which is a blended tax rate around the world. You know, if it goes from 21 to 28, you'd have to, you know, the person who does the models will have to also take the tax rate up for Tesla, just to be honest. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that would affect it. And it would impact people's price targets.
I mean, do you have any longer term, you know, things? Are you concerned that this will impact growth, innovation, investments, all that?
I look, 28% tax rate is high relative to the rest of the world, but you know, the flip side of more inflation and more growth is people are more prosperous. People have more wealth. That's the whole definition of GDP. It's a national income measurement. So if GDP growth is stronger, in theory, you're going to sell more Teslas, you know, and you're going to sell more cars in general. So I think it kind of balances each other out. Yeah, you have, you know, a higher tax rate, you know, you have a higher discount rate used for valuation, but you're going to sell more cars. So I kind of look at it as a wash. I'm not smart enough to figure out which is more powerful at this point.
Got it. Have you heard anything about kind of the more personal tax increases? You know, Biden has floated the whole removal or, you know, taking out long-term capital gains tax for those making a million or more, so they're going to pay just income tax, but then he might increase the income tax rate as well. Do you think that will be part of this infrastructure bill, or do you think that's a separate issue?
Well, the way it's supposed to work is this was the $2 trillion of you know, traditional infrastructure projects. That's what this $2.3 trillion that he announced the other day. This is being called Infrastructure Part 1. Infrastructure Part 2 will be the social part. It'll be elderly care, child care, health care, as he calls it, social infrastructure. The first part is supposed to be paid with the corporate tax increase going from 21 to 28. The second part is supposed to be paid with increases in personal tax rates. And it's not going to be a million. The threshold, unfortunately, is going to be lower than that. And what he has said is 400,000 is the threshold. I think for single, 500,000 if you're married. You're going to have a higher, probably the marginal tax rate will be, you know, put higher for wealthy people, you know, get close to 40%. And you're right. You probably will see, you know, some sort of scale on capital gains. It's not going to be, you know, 20%. It's going to be maybe 30%. It'll be higher. It won't be as high as the regular tax rate, you know, the regular individual rate, but it's definitely going higher. There's no question in my mind. And look, we knew that by electing Biden, he was going to do that.
Yeah. So the scale, like the 30%, I mean, would that go for people like based on income, like as you get higher income? Got it. And at a certain certain income rate, you would just be taxed at income rate taxes.
Yeah. Right? And look, Dave, we don't know any of the details yet. Even the $174 billion that's in the called Infrastructure One budget, as we talked about before, we don't know the detail behind it. And so that's point one. Point two, when you're in reconciliation, trying to get the House and the Senate to agree, and you're trying to get Republicans, at least one Republican, to vote for it so you can call it bipartisan, you know, there's going to be compromises here and there. So I don't have a crystal ball to tell you, you know, where the corporate tax rate is going to end up. My guess is it'll be less than 28. And I don't have a crystal ball to tell you where the regular tax rate is going to be, the income threshold, or where the capital gains rate is. It's got to be higher than we're just today.
Got it. I mean, do you think this part two, the social infrastructure, bill, do you think that's going to happen this year, or is it going to be pushed out to next year?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think part one will happen. And then you're in the point where you're going to have the Republicans and maybe even some Democrats saying we have enough stimulus. Because if you start getting really tremendous growth this year, let's say numbers above 10%, and if you start seeing inflation start roaring up, people are going to say, let's pull the stimulus back. Because that's the way you got to think about it. You got fiscal stimulus, you got monetary stimulus. Monetary stimulus is keeping interest rates at zero. You got that. Fiscal stimulus is, you know, raising government spending and offsetting it partly with taxes, which is one of the things that I think is positive, right? You don't have as much stimulus when you're raising taxes at the same rate. You're raising government spending, but you're also raising taxes. I don't think once you get this done, this Infrastructure One bill done, I would be shocked if they get the Infrastructure Two bill, which would be the social infrastructure, done this year. I would be shocked.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Might be a good time to
wrap it up. Maybe one more question.
Yeah, might be a good time to sell some long-term capital gains talk. So, Gary, I want to actually thank you for taking the time out, being generous and sharing, and also just what you do on Twitter and the Tesla community, always just generously sharing your knowledge and being generous with others. It's been fantastic. I love the conversation, the dialogue. I'm sure the whole community does. So wanted to share my appreciation and wish you the best weekend. Do you have any other kind of last thoughts or ideas or things you want to share?
No, thank you for all you do, Dave. I think you add tremendous value to the Twitter community yourself. And thank you to all, you know, your followers and my followers for being supportive. I think Monday will be very interesting. I think it's going to be, you know, it's going to be this, you know, great fundamentals. EV adoption must be going higher, you know, versus interest rates are going higher. So, you know, you got the numerator going up, you got the denominator going up. And I think, look, Three Gordons is what I hope we see on Monday.
All right. Three Gordons. All right. See you, Gary. See you. Take care. All right. Take care. Bye. Bye.